Tennis Direct are Australia's favourite online tennis store with fast delivery and great prices. Free delivery on orders over $150. Just visit their website, tennisdirect.com.au, and you can get a 10% discount store-wide. Just use the promo code FIRSTSERVE10. That's FIRSTSERVE10.
Welcome to Crunching the Numbers, the First Serve's in-depth look at the art and science of playing the game.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Crunching the Numbers. I'm Mark Sefors from the Tennis Menu, and alongside me, as always, we have Shane Leonard from Data Driven Sports Analytics, who has a great package on the Tennis Menu, and you can go to the Tennis Menu to subscribe for free and get a free account and check out all of the free content that we do have on there. But you can also sign up and get the greatest data, drills, and also flexibility, mobility exercises for a very low price. So get to the Tennis Menu for whatever you need from a tennis perspective. And this man here, Shane Leonage, has been our man who has been crunching numbers for about 30 odd weeks now and doing a great job of it. He's the most wanted man on the WTA ATP Tour for stats and data these days. Thank you very much for joining us, Mr. Shane, and hopefully it finds you not too busy or as busy as it was during Roland Garros.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for the introduction. I always have to shrink my head after talking to you. But it was a great tournament. Glad to have a few days breather, but with the condensed schedule, it means that we've got players playing in a few events this week as well.
Absolutely. It's quite a busy time of year, and obviously a lot of players wanting to get a lot of matches under their belt because they have missed a big chunk of the year through the COVID restrictions. So you're obviously still busy, still crunching numbers on your athletes. But today we're going to look at crunching the numbers from the final and of the final, the Roland Garros men's and women's event, and how Nadal dismantled Novak Djokovic, and also the great form of the young Polish Iga Swiatek, the 19-year-old who has taken the world by storm, ranked number 54 in the world prior to the event, and comes in and absolutely annihilates her opposition right the way through without dropping more than four games in a set for the entire tournament. So, Shane, I know you've been looking at the numbers and dissecting it. We had a great look at it a few times over the last couple of days, but what did you find? Let's start with the men's side of the draw and how Nadal went about his victory against Novak Djokovic.
Yeah, look, it was a very interesting final, and I think going into it, there was a lot of hype about the matchup, about the conditions and how Nadal will struggle. And then even the roof closing in the last 10 minutes before the match starting completely in Novak's favour. But yeah, Nadal came out and he actually, and I watched a lot of these guys play and got data on a lot of their matches, but he came out and he played a little bit differently. And the biggest difference, and the numbers show it, was the variance in ground stroke speed. So he would alternate between a slower ball, primarily directed at Novak's backhand, and then flattening it out. So the differential between the shots was so significant that it really caused Novak a lot of trouble and didn't let him get a lot of rhythm. So we might start on that point.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I'm glad the data says that, because I was watching the match thinking, wow, look at the variance of what he's doing here to beat Novak. And Novak obviously and I classify him as a counterpuncher with aggressive baseliner tendencies. So that's his secondary game style. There's obviously I'm really big on, there's a primary game style, secondary game style. And to beat Novak, especially the backhand wing, if you go hard at the backhand wing, he uses the ball speed and deflects it back where he wants and uses that speed. But if you go slow, you go heavy, or you slice the ball to the backhand, he finds it really hard to generate off that wing. I guess the flip side of that is the forehand side is a total opposite. So he needs time, he needs space. He's got a semi-Western grip. He likes to wind it up a little bit and have time to be able to really generate ball speed with the momentum of his swing. So you have to take that time away from him. You can't give him space. You can't give him time. And Nadal was just pinging the backhand corner over and over again. Slow ball, he'd slice it. He'd lift it nice and high. I'm hoping you've got something on that, because I think that's an important one. He'd go high to the backhand really slow. And then when his opportunity came and he had time and space, Nadal would ping Djokovic's forehand with a really quick, hard, flatter ball than what he was doing to the backhand side. So that was my eyes looking at it. And I'm glad that your data did pick that up, because at the end of the day, it's like, it's really important that, that my opinion or the coach's opinion is matched through numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. And it certainly did. And I think in terms of shots flattening out, he was about 5% higher on that point going at the Djokovic forehand than in previous encounters. And he actually sliced about 3 or 4% more than previous encounters. And a lot of that was directed towards the back end. But one of the things we look at is court locations. And there was a specific spot on the backhand side, maybe three quarters of the way up. And Nadal was really targeting getting the ball there, keeping it low, no pace. And Djokovic really couldn't hurt him from that position on the backhand. And that's something I think definitely Carlos Moya said before the match, they had a plan and they had an idea where they wanted Djokovic to be. And I think that was definitely something that they sort of brainstormed together. And Nadal, to his credit, he executed perfectly the first two sets. Unbelievable. That level that he played at, he's lost twice on Roland Garros, but he isn't the spring chicken anymore. I didn't think he could come out and do that.
Absolutely, 100% right. And I think the slice that you're referring to is the one that just drags the opponent just off the baseline. So it's almost like in between, do I hit it and come forward and go to the net, or do I hit it and go backwards? And it sort of draws you to do sort of none of the above. And it's sort of like a really tough situation. If your feet are positioned one step inside the baseline or even a step and a half, you kind of find it really challenging to make that right decision. And I know that's how Misha Zverev beat Andy Murray in the Australian Open about 3 years ago. He did the same sort of ploy and tried to draw Andy Murray forward to come to the net. Now, in this match here, Novak Djokovic obviously came forward, I think it was 27 times the net, which is pretty significant for Novak Djokovic because he's generally not that kind of player, but he obviously found that he had to be more aggressive to beat Nadal on the day, and his error count was a lot higher. There's no doubt you'll go through that. But, the ploy to try and draw him forward takes him out of his comfort zone, which I think Nadal did extremely well, and then he was able to open up through depth on the next ball.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because I think that this matchup's gone through a number of stages and they've both sort of reinvented the way that they're playing each other. And I think that's a strategy that the Nadal team will look to bring to even a hard court, even a grass court. I think it's something that this clay court, it's still a clay court, but compared to most years, it probably played less like clay court than the past. And the fact that this strategy works so well, I'm sure this will be something they look at. Well, one thing you touched on, sort of Novak coming forward, one thing that I kept hearing in the media was his use of the drop shot, and he was using it right the way throughout from round one to all the way to the final. And even he mentioned in the press conference, talking it up a little bit, it was a strategy where I think he hit 29 drop shots or attempted 29 and he only won 13. So a success rate of 45%. And crunching the data, and not just for that match, but one of the things that we found was the more that you use the drop shot, the more predictable it became and the less success you were having. And I felt like Djokovic probably relied on it too much and went to the well too much. And one, he lost a bit of rhythm on his other ground strokes. He was making one, four star errors, the shot after a point with a drop shot. And two, Nadal was starting to read it and redirect it. And Novak would have to play a follow-up ball. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on the drop shot.
Yeah, well, I think it worked successfully well against Tsitsipas in the semi-final. And I think that's what he was looking at. It was definitely a good ploy against Nadal, who does position himself really far behind the baseline to open him up. But as you did say, when you overuse it, it becomes so predictable that, you know, Nadal was all over it every time he did it. Now, he obviously came into the match, Djokovic, with a plan that was get Nadal off the baseline with the drop shot and also come forward and make the points a bit shorter, or try to make the points a bit shorter and make sure he was more aggressive. And both ploys obviously backfired a little bit. I think Nadal executed his plan a lot better than what Novak did. But, you know, the drop shot for me was a great success in his previous matches, which I know, he's obviously gotten through them. But, Nadal he's obviously someone who reads the game extremely well and extremely quick. And when he gets there, he not only just makes the ball, he does something with it. And that was probably the difference between him and Tsitsipas, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it certainly worked well in the previous rounds. I just felt like Novak did himself a disservice. He's actually one of the best players in sort of 5+ rally category. He can beat anyone from the baseline, and he has proven he's matched Nadal on clay on a baseline in those long rallies. Yes, Nadal's probably slightly above him there, but I felt like he tried to deviate too much from the way he plays, and it backfired. Certainly the first two sets, he really, for all that effort, he only had two games.
Yeah, and I don't think Nadal, Novak's been listening to our podcast, because he would have known the 80-20 rule, and he actually hasn't worked his 80% strengths. He's played basically 20% of his strengths and gone off his game to try and win that match. And we're really big on that, is to, you know, your strengths are going to outweigh how you beat an opponent, and if you can play to your strengths a lot more often, that'll get you more success. So, you know, really good, obviously, numbers that you've gone through with that, and obviously dissects that match really well. And obviously, seeing Nadal win his 13th Roland Garros is one of the most incredible feats. And I don't think we'll ever see that in our lifetime of someone winning 13 of the same event or same Grand Slam, the way Nadal has. And he's been incredible. And obviously, you know, there was a couple of great little photos that came out over the last few days where people have made him 60-year-old Nadal winning his, you know, 50th Roland Garros. And I think that's, it's incredible watching what people do online. But he's been an absolute master on that court at Philippe Chatrier, and been phenomenal player at Roland Garros for many years. And I think his record's now 100 wins and two losses. I think
it stems. That's right. So here's some mind-blowing stats, and let's get to the women very quickly. But Nadal on clay wins 56% of points and has won 91% of his matches. At Roland Garros, he's won 58% of points, so 2% more, and he's won 98% of those matches. Unbelievable data, unbelievable stats on just that kind of dominance. I don't think I'll ever see that again in my lifetime.
Yeah. Incredible. I mean, for a 98% winning record to only have a 58% point winning record, it just shows you that it's really important to teach our players in development of, you know, you are going to lose 50% of your points, so you better learn how to lose. And the best players know how to lose, and they're accepting of it, they're accepting of mistakes, and they're accepting to be able to move on. And if you can't accept mistakes or playing poorly, then, you know, this sport isn't for you. So it was great data, and well done on that research. I think that's incredible. Let's move on to the women's side of the draw, where I can never ever pick a winner on the women's side of the draw in any tournament that goes ahead. It's harder to pick than a clean nose, the women's tennis. And this was absolutely phenomenal. Iga Świątek, the Polish superstar who won Roland Garros 2 years ago in the juniors, has come out and won the women's event, ranked 54 in the world. What an amazing tournament she had, only dropping four games at most in a set, did not drop a set for the entire tournament. So incredible stats, incredible result. Shane, what did you notice about the way that Iga Świątek did play the game?
Yeah, look, her run was incredible. And you're right, picking a winner is very difficult on the WTA. It's great, though. It's good fun, and it's nice to see such a wide sort of net of players going into tournaments with the belief that they can win it. To Kenan's credit, I felt like that first set was the most pressure that Iga felt in the whole match. I think at 3-5, and when it got to 4-5, I think it was definitely a line ball in terms of who was going to win that set. Iga went back to her strengths, and one of the things that we noticed in the data was she used the angles more than any other player in the tournament. Something we've talked about sort of off air, it just feels like there's a new crop of players coming through that are playing more sort of male patterns, we could say. So using more angles, using more slice, even coming forward a little bit more than the traditional sort of WTA player. And I think, yeah, we saw that certainly with Iga Świątek. I'm probably getting the name wrong, but it was great to see that, and great to see her win.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the thing that I think you hit the nail on the head, her width of ball is just so different to the female game. You know, generally the WTA players play through the baseline. So the ball dissects the baseline before it dissects the sideline. Iga has played the Roland Garros tournament, the whole tournament, dissecting the sideline first. And, you know, that was, I don't know what your stats were, but I would have said it would have been more than going through the baseline. She was playing with width. She was serving with width to be able to create width on the second ball. She brought angles into the game. And to beat her, you can't play with angle. If you give her the width, she creates doubly more width than what you're doing. And the other thing that she did do, you did say male-orientated patterns. She was coming forward as well as sitting back. So she could play with power, she could play with width, and she came forward a lot of the time too, which I felt she had great variability in her game, great adaptability to the current conditions and environment, and was able to really pressure girls in all elements of the game and not just through angle.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think throughout the tournament, her if you're looking at a first and second serves, both on the juice and ad, should go out wide, and that just she wants to start the point off by moving her opponent off the court and then going the other way. So she did that through the tournament. In the final, she did actually target the Kennan backhand on the first and second serve. And I felt like the serve out wide on the ad court worked really well. She won a huge amount of points there. I felt under pressure when she started sort of going at on the juice side to the backhand of Kennan. She didn't get the same reward, which she sort of rectified towards the end of the first set. And then with Kennan's injury, it became a lot easier. But yeah, interesting to touch on that, Mark.
Yeah, it seemed like that the target or the game plan for her was go to the backhand and then expose the forehand. That's how I saw it for the most of the match. The success rate, obviously, you're right, on the juice side, she couldn't open up the forehand enough to get Kennan on the move playing that forehand. But when she started serving wide on both sides, both juice and ad, and then she would then open up one side of the court, and that's where Iga plays her best tennis, where there's a bit of court opening. She can play the width to be able to create a bit more movement in the opponent. And that's how I saw it happening. And obviously, you know, Sophia Kennan, when the ball was down the tee on the juice side, was able to stay in the middle of the court and was very hard to move her because Kennan wants to play through the baseline. And Swiatek, once she started to get the width in the game, that was it. You know, and it was a game of width. She did that through the entire tournament. If someone tried to play width for width, they were in trouble. They needed, I think the way to play her is to be able to centralize the ball, take away her angles, keep her deep in the court. Not saying that's always going to work, but to me, that's the plan. She's got rounded grips, more the semi-Western kind of grip that she really likes to get around the outsides of the ball. And if she's in the middle of the court, that then brings the sidelines into play where there'd be more errors wide than there would be if she was out wide playing the shot.
Absolutely. And one of the crazy stats with her run, and I don't think I've updated it for the last match, but she was winning 93% of return games. Unbelievable. Wow. I mean, that's just like mind-blowing. Yeah,
that's incredible. 93%. Wow. That's insane. I mean, that's a stat that obviously slower courts, and obviously the females don't have the biggest serves. But at the end of the day, if you're winning 93% of your return games, you just have to win one service game and you're pretty much there for the set. So that's an incredible stat. And I know, congratulations to her. She's obviously done what no other Polish player has been able to do, and that's to win a Grand Slam. And she has been likened to Agnieszka Radwanska, and basically people are already comparing to say that she's a better player because she's won a Grand Slam. But she has quickly debunked that idea and basically said that I've got to do this for a lot longer period. She did that for 12 years. I need to pay my dues. And it was a really good level head she's shown. And I think she's got the mindset to be able to be consistent in this game.
Yeah, I love that about her. And you know, showing that respect to Radwanska, who sort of paved the way for Polish women, certainly in the last couple of decades. And we forget Radwanska was very close to winning Wimbledon against Serena Williams. So she was a fantastic player, and some of that creativity, which I think we do see with Iga, is inspired by Agnieszka. So it's great to see that. I think Swiatek's got the game on any surface. She's going to be an all-court threat, hopefully injury-free, and we're going to see a lot more of her in the next decade.
Yeah, and will this be a sign of things to come? Ash Barty in 2019 brought the all-court game to Roland Garros, winning the title. This year, Iga Swiatek basically mimics exactly what Ash Barty did 1 year ago and has done the same thing with her variety of game, coming forward, staying back, playing with angle, playing drop shots, doing the works. Is this where women's tennis is going? That's a question for you out there who are listening to be able to think about in your head and dissect, and hopefully you've gotten a little bit more of the insight as to how the two Roland Garros titles were won this year. Rafael Nadal and Iga Swiatek, congratulations from us, from Crunching the Numbers. Shane Leonage, thank you very much for everything that you do. You can find Shane at Data Driven Sports Analytics. He's also got his own package on the Tennis Menu where he's dissecting the game from a numbers perspective. Thank you very much. You are also a Cricket Australia. You also do things for multiple players across the tour, including on Jabor. And the work that you do does not go unnoticed, Shane. So thanks so much for your time, your effort, and your research.
Thanks, Mark. Pleasure to bring this episode to everyone. And stay safe. And for those in Melbourne, we're hopefully only a few weeks away from getting out.
Exactly right. We're still stuck inside, but pleasure to bring these podcast to you all, and hopefully you're enjoying them and getting something from them. We'd love to hear from you also. If you've got anything that you'd like to ask us, any numbers you'd like us to dissect, we'll be able to hopefully bring that to you. If you just, you know, message us on social media, we're more than happy to help you out in any way we can. That's been another episode of Crunching the Numbers. Thanks so much for joining us here on the First Serves broadcast. We hope to see you next week. And obviously, we're going to bring you the latest in all the numbers from the game of tennis. That episode was brought to you by The Tennis Menu. And don't forget, you can also go back and listen to all the First Serve podcasts, including Aussies Only, In the Huddle, and the weekly podcast with Brett Phillips, First Serve.
Subscribe to The First Serve via Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform to listen at your convenience to all our weekly content, including past editions of Crunching the Numbers, as well as our dedicated commercial radio program each Monday on SEN that you may have missed at 7 p.m. Eastern, Aussies Only, and In the Huddle, produced by Study and Play USA. Subscribe to The First Serve, your home of tennis.